This is the IBJ podcast for the week of January the 10th, 2022, brought to you by Taft. I'm your host, Mason King. Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. This episode will go live early on the morning of Monday, January the 10th, which you probably know is the date of the College Football Playoff National Championship at Lucas Oil Stadium in downtown Indianapolis. Tens of thousands of fans from the Southeast are here for the big show, hopefully wearing winter coats and rain ponchos over their Alabama and Georgia sweatshirts. They're shelling out premium rates for downtown's 7,400 hotel rooms or lodging that's a bit farther afield. And hopefully they're filling up on local cuisine to help steady the indie restaurant scene. And this is nothing new. I mean, if you'll pardon my French, this is downtown's raison d'etre. We are indie, therefore we host. We long ago hitched downtown's wagon to sports and convention tourism. We make it our business to be the best and to compete with any and all comers. Indeed, it often feels like we're in constant competition for major sports events and need to continually prove that we can punch above our weight, as we like to say, as a mid-sized Midwestern city. To be honest with you, the idea that we need to prove our bona fides seems a little bit ridiculous given that last year we hosted nearly all of March Madness. But in this business, apparently, if you're not always trying to win, you're losing ground. It doesn't hurt to ask, however, what is the actual value of continually upending the city for big sports events that require incredible resources and many, many, many thousands of hours of volunteer time? Now, there are a couple of ways to look at it. Now, conveniently, Visit Indy, the city's tourism agency, always provides a dollar figure for the estimated economic impact of big events on Central Indiana. For the playoff championship, Visit Indy's estimate is $150 million, an impressive, nicely rounded figure. And we journalists always appreciate the ability to quantify these things and measure the significance of an event. But the estimates beg the question of how you possibly could accurately predict the economic impact in a very complex economic environment. I was a bit embarrassed not to know the answer, so I contacted Chris Gall of Visit Indy to see if he could explain the process. Now, there's a larger view to explore as well, beyond the dollars and cents, be it $150 million or $75 million or $50 million. Is there an ultimate inherent benefit for Indianapolis to being a great host? Now, for that question, I turn to Mark Rosentraub, a professor of sports economics at the University of Michigan. But we'll kick things off with my conversation with Chris Gall. I am pleased to welcome to the podcast Chris Gall, Senior Vice President of Marketing and Communications for Visit Indy. I know you are incredibly busy this week, and I appreciate you taking the time.
Thanks for having me on, Mason.
How many out-of-town visitors are we expecting this weekend?
Our estimate, and it's been an estimate months in the making, is truly 100,000 unique visitors to Indianapolis, measured Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday into Monday. And that accounts for fans and their alumni bases and the bands and the media. That accounts for even some Central Indiana residents, a percentage of Central Indiana residents, maybe not even having a game ticket coming downtown and being part of the activity, and corporate America and all the seats in the stands being filled. So it's truly 100,000, very conservatively, we believe will set foot somewhere in the downtown and be part of this long weekend.
So if I come down from my home in Broad Ripple, am I considered a visitor?
By definition, nationwide, a visitor is someone who travels more than 50 miles or more to consume an event or an attraction or see a game, and or spends the night, and or spends a significant amount of time and money behind. And so when we do our post-game analysis of just how many people were in and around Indianapolis tied specifically to the College Football Playoff National Championship, we'll be looking at not only hotel occupancy and the free ticket admission inside the convention center for the Fan Fest and the 5K. We'll also look at just how restaurants and bars did as a whole. And that's usually where you grab a lot of your locals, if you will, because they're not probably going to be checking into a hotel, but they'll be checking into a bar or restaurant.
So the operative number for this conversation is $150 million. Visit Indy estimates the college football playoff national championship weekend will generate $150 million in economic impact for Central Indiana. So first off, explain to me how you arrive at that figure.
Sure. And you know, a lot of times in the media, and you'll hear about these big conferences or events and their economic impact. And these numbers are important to us. And we take the calculation, pregame calculation, and moreover, the postgame analysis very seriously. And so here's how we come to these conclusions. In 2015, in working with an economist at Rockport Analytics, which is a nationwide firm who's in the business of doing economic impact studies for cities and states, as well as major sporting events, we actually developed our own economic impact calculator at Visit Indy. We survive on events and tourism and trade shows and meetings. And so we need to know what value they bring each and every time someone meets. And so there are hundreds of variables that go into this economic impact calculator. It's total fans, total hotel room nights, how many square feet inside the Indiana Convention Center or Lucas Oil Stadium is being rented, how many people are flying versus driving. Those who bring their car have a waiting versus those who arrive by air. It takes into consideration how many men and women in our hospitality industry will have more full-time employment during the duration of this event. And then it calculates very conservatively what this will generate for our city and state. And so in the case of the college football playoff, our calculator is showing $150 million in economic impact. Now, that's not without data. And so our data has been derived from three main sources. The first are the national CFP team. They're based out of Dallas, and this game has happened seven times in the past. And so they have benchmarks on a certain level of people who attend and sponsors and hotel activity. And so we have that historical data that feeds. Then we have our local organizing committee, who actually officed here within the walls of Visit Indy. And they're really close to the event. They are tracking hours and time invested in how many hotels are being utilized and how many special event venues outside of the stadium and convention center are being utilized. And so that's data we use. And then we work closely with the Capital Improvement Board, the CIB, who owns and operates Lucas Oil Stadium and the Indiana Convention Center, Gainbridge Fieldhouse. And we find out, based on rental of these facilities, how that is affecting the calculator. And then we derive that number. It's important that for nearly every single event, trade show, convention, or major sporting event, nine times out of 10, we reconcile that number. It's important to us that if our pre-trade show for the Fire Department Instructors Conference or the National FFA Conference shows $50 or $60 million, well, what did it actualize? And so we're slated to, with event organizers, do a post-game analysis. And we'll be anxious to see how close we came with our pre-game estimate.
What are the, by percentage of the total impact, what are the biggest data points? I'm guessing hotel rooms is a big one, but can you give me an idea?
Yeah, that's also a great question. When we leaned on Rockport, accommodations is first and foremost. It's truly purely heads and beds. So the more people who spend the night, not only downtown, throughout Marion County, throughout the Metropolitan Statistical Area, what was that hotel? How many nights did they stay? And what was the average daily rate commanded by that hotel room? And so for an event like the college football playoff, people will stay longer and pay more for a hotel room than, say, a traditional conference or a long weekend if you're a visitor from Chicago. So at the very top of that list is accommodations. Food and beverage is a huge part of that as well. As you can imagine, those who are dining in our restaurants, those who are taking in a sip at the bar, that makes up the food and beverage tax alone, and what's generated for a long weekend like this is extremely healthy. You also have what we consider entertainment as a category. This is the idea that corporations are renting out Crane Bay or the Indiana Roof Ballroom or a ballroom at a hotel, and they're entertaining their clients. And so we can track how many special event venues are being used. There's also shopping. As you can imagine, even though urban malls aren't the most popular right now, our visitors they'll end up buying items on Mass Ave. They'll end up finding their way into the nooks and crannies of our boutiques and buy products, and that generates. And then finally is transportation, Ubers, Lyfts, taxis, limousines, shuttle buses. We'll have the airport how many people are flying in versus driving. We couldn't be happier that two teams that live a little further away are coming, because that will drive up the spending, because the majority will arrive by plane. And in fact, Delta announced this week 3 new flights nonstop to cater to these fan bases. And that will drive the calculation up. But those are the big buckets when we look at economic impact.
My understanding is the figure also takes into account what we call both direct spending and indirect spending. What is the difference there?
Yeah, for the economists, kind of in layperson terms, a direct spend would be Sally Sue races into Indianapolis. She's a huge Alabama fan, and she and her best friend are here, and they check into the JW Marriott, and they're paying $500 a night for that hotel room. That's a direct spend. That generates hotel tax, sales tax, et cetera. There's a housekeeper who depends on tourism for a paycheck. He or she might live in Pike Township and commutes downtown regularly, and he or she earns a paycheck for cleaning a room that the visitor is spending the night in, and that would be an example of indirect. Another example is St. Elmo's. The line will be out the door. That visitor is going to spend money at St. Elmo's tasting the fiery shrimp cocktail, and that's going to be a direct spend. Now, the server is going to serve that shrimp cocktail from a provider probably out of state that was purchased, shipped here, and served. And so those are some of the indirect costs or indirect spend that the supply chain benefits from that visitor ultimately eating that meal.
Now, I am so far out of my depth, it's not even funny. But here's my question about the direct spend number. We have a Sally Sue who's spending $500 to spend the night at the Marriott. Now, all of that money doesn't just stay in Indianapolis, does it? I mean, some of it goes back to Marriott headquarters on the moon or wherever it is and pays the CEO salary. Does your formula take into account, you know, what doesn't actually stay here?
Exactly. It does. There's what we call leakage, and that's monies that don't stay here and end up back at Marriott International. The 17% hotel tax is really what that boils down to. That's the number where the city and the state win. They collect those funds. They get redistributed over at the state house. They go to the capital improvement board to feed their budget so we can keep these facilities updated and safe. In some cases, when they return to city government, we know that tourism tax goes for fire and police and public safety and ancillary needs of even road work. So it's not all just kind of back to tourism, and it's not all just that $500 in the tourism arena. Some of it does go back into different pockets. But because of that 17% hotel tax, and because the accommodations are such a big weighted factor in our economic impact calculator, that's what we really focus on, are those heads and beds. And for this CFP, we're tracking rooms being consumed all the way north to Lafayette and south to Bloomington. And by the way, the Airbnb market is lit up. There's more than 2,000 Airbnb listings that have hit the market over the course of this long weekend that are being consumed. And so visitors are taking traditional and more cutting edge ways to spend the night here in Indianapolis. I should mention, out of curiosity, I think it's timely that Rockford Analytics is the same firm that they developed our economic impact calculator. They fine-tuned it in 2015 and each year since. They're also the same agency that a decade ago did our pre- and post-game analysis for what the Super Bowl generated in terms of economic impact. So they've been in Indianapolis before. They did pre- and post-game Super Bowl, and I think it was $170 million in economic impact derived from the Super Bowl. That was scientific, and they rolled up their sleeves and helped us. And so that's kind of our longevity with this agency. They're the same agency, after March Madness occurred, that through the Indiana Sports Corp, that really we wanted to know, what did this game, what did this month, what did March Madness in totality generate? And it was nearly $50 million in economic impact. And it was through Rockford Analytics and the science of what they do as economists that helped put that number into light. Pre-game, some were saying up $100 million. And that number obviously didn't come to fruition. March Madness is such an outlier. It was such a first and probably only one-time event. We have so many moving pieces and protocol and fans and 25% fans here and maybe 50% fans here. And as a fan base would win, they'd continue staying or maybe they'd leave. And so many moving parts. That's so hard to determine.
Yeah, for folks who have really good memories, right, before we hosted nearly all of March Madness, the estimate was, you know, a healthy nine figures for economic impact. And it's to say it ended up being closer to $47 million. Did you use the impact calculator to determine that $100 million figure?
We did not. We did not. We determined in working with the NCAA and the sports corps that we were hopeful we'd get to 100 million healthy nine figures. But we did not use our calculator because there are so many unknowns. For the college football playoff, again, we've talked to Miami and Dallas, and Arizona hosted the game in 2016 and did a post-game economic impact study that showed, I think, more than 200 million. So our 150 could be, at the end of the day, could be very conservative.
Yeah, the Arizona survey from 2016, I think it found that on average, visitors spent almost four nights in Arizona. Do we have a sense of what it's going to be for Indianapolis?
Very similar. Most of our hotels are able to command a four-night minimum. Most visitors want the reassurance. And that's not that's very common for a Final Four. That's very common for the Indy 500. That's very common for large sporting events and large trade shows and conventions. Visitors are locked into a three or four night minimum. And that's to protect the hotel. It's also to protect the visitor to make sure that their hotel room doesn't go anywhere. So you'll see the majority of visitors doing, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday night. That'll be the day pattern because the game happens on Monday. And that four night minimum is very important for us because anywhere in the United States, the hardest night to fill a hotel, what do you think, Mason? The hardest night of the week, Monday through Sunday. What's the hardest night of the week to fill a hotel anywhere in the United States of America?
Sunday.
Sunday night. You're exactly right. So this event will keep visitors in Indianapolis on Sunday night, and that's a big win for us economically.
So what are you keeping your eye on over the next few days? What are the important metrics that you plan to be following?
Yeah, we're in constant communication with each and every hotel that will be utilized for this game. We want to make sure guests are arriving, they're checking in. We want to make sure that the fan base and those visitors are healthy and safe. We want them to feel welcome. So it's just that whole kind of welcome. So as we gear up here for the weekend, it's that main metric. Are the visitors who have reserved rooms actualizing? Are they arriving and are they safe and are they healthy? We'll be anxious to see. There's 1,000 media descending on Indianapolis. We'll be anxious and watching to make sure each and every one of them pick up their media credential from the local host committee and the college football playoff organizers. We'll be touching base with restaurants. We have a mechanism that we can real-time touch base with our downtown and Marion County restaurants to see, hey, are you picking up seats? Are you picking up reservations? Are there crowds? Are there lines? We'll be monitoring the three major food delivery systems. You look at Grubhub, you look at Uber Eats, you look at DoorDash. A lot of these consumers back home want food on the go to their hotel room and could be taking meals that way. So we've spent time educating restaurants on food delivery. And we'll be touching base with our friends at the host committee to make sure that the ancillary events are picking up attendance and people are outside and they're staying on Georgia Street to Monument Circle. And so you'll see Georgia Street with fire pits and lights. You'll see giant screens on Georgia Street where even if you don't have a ticket to go see the concert on Monument Circle, you can watch it on Georgia Street. That's out of design so that it's a pressure point. If Monument Circle fills up, we can have those fans and visitors on Georgia Street.
Thank you so much, Chris. This is a giant help, and I really appreciate it.
I'm proud to be on, Mason, and thanks for your interest, and I hope you'll come downtown.
Okay, let's take a quick break so we can hear from our sponsor. This is the IBJ Podcast.
Taft, today's modern law firm. With more than 625 attorneys across 11 offices, we provide solutions to the business issues facing middle market and emerging companies alike. We do this through a highly collaborative and inclusive team approach. Taft, the modern law firm. To learn more, visit taftlaw.com.
All right, we're back with this week's edition of the IBJ Podcast. Next up is my interview with Mark Rosentraub, a professor of sport management and director of the Center for Sports Venue and Real Estate Development at the University of Michigan.
It's my pleasure to welcome to the podcast Mark Rosentraub, who for decades has studied the economic impact of sports venues and sports events. He has a particular expertise in Indianapolis, having studied several sports and tourism facilities here. He also was a professor and a dean at IUPUI in most, if not all, of the 1990s. Thank you for making time today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You know, just to kick things off, I was wondering, just on my way to work today, how closely you're going to be following this event in the aftermath. Is there something in particular that you plan to track or are interested in knowing?
No, since the University of Michigan is not going to be there, I will look at the game on TV, maybe for part of it, but my interests were dashed Friday night. It's an extraordinarily important for Indianapolis because of the whole development strategy of downtown and the attraction of events. Is there going to be some new spending in downtown Indianapolis? Of course there will be. There will be some people in the hotels. Marriott Corporation will make some money. Holiday Inn, Hilton, et cetera, they'll all make some money. Some of that stays in Indianapolis. Some of it ends up in other regional economies. The important thing to underscore is the fact that for about 24 to 36 hours, the sports world is going to be talking about Indianapolis and all that it has achieved relative to the revitalization of downtown, the building of facilities that make it easy, comfortable, and in a pandemic situation, safe to have an event with organizations that literally know how to assist the NCAA, the NFL, University of Georgia, University of Alabama, to do whatever they wish to do to celebrate their activity. Those things are very valuable.
Let me back up just for a second.
Okay.
So let me give you the magic number, $150 million. This is the estimate the Visit Indy, our local tourism agency, has calculated with their formula to ballpark the economic impact for these kinds of events, what kind of impact that will have on central Indiana. And they use this formula for all kinds of events in Indianapolis. If you bring 10,000 dentists to Indianapolis for a convention for a weekend, they'll plug in the data. How many ounces of steak are dentists likely to eat? And come up with a potential economic impact. Now, these are big round numbers. We as journalists use a shorthand for the significance of an event.
I don't know. I haven't seen the algorithm that they're using. So let's assume for the sake of an argument that they have dealt with all the leakages. Well, let me explain what happens. So somebody comes into Indianapolis. They spend money on a hotel. They spend money on food, beverage, transportation. All of those elements happen. And portions of that spending does stick in central Indiana. Large portions, as we say, dissipate or leak out. That's the word we use. For every different good and service, there's a different leakage rate. For that steak, it has a high leakage because we import most of the meat from other parts of the United States here. If they buy a bottle of French wine, well, by definition, French wine, that is not made in Indiana. So everything leaks at different rates. Let's assume for the sake of our conversation today that they really calculated all the leakages appropriately and that the stick number they came up with is $150 million. What I would argue that is even more important to Indianapolis than $150 million, and even let's just say for the argument, the GDP of central Indiana is much, much larger. Though $150 million, while it's a lot of money, in percentage terms, is very, very small. All right. So even if we said it's all $150 million, it's all sticks in central Indiana, the GDP, as a percentage of GDP, we would be below 1%. In fact, we'd probably be below 0.5%. So in that sense, you don't see a great change. Where you do see the change is the constant identification of Indianapolis as a well-run, well-managed center for large-scale events. And that's for me, and all the years that I was involved in central Indiana and in downtown Indianapolis, that to me was the key issue. The stick money is good. More is better than less, always. We're all on the same page. What's more important is that people forget that Indianapolis, when the whole downtown redevelopment project began, had a very dismal reputation. That dismal reputation hurts businesses from recruiting the talent that they need, and hurts us from getting businesses into central Indiana. What an event of this magnitude does is it again highlights how well Indianapolis operates as a city. That is the value. And those are much more difficult to quantify, yet we know if a city has a poor reputation, it doesn't attract visitors, it doesn't attract businesses, it doesn't convince young people to build their life in central Indiana. This establishes Indianapolis as a well-managed, well-run city that is safe, that even in the midst of a pandemic, pulled off a basketball tournament last year flawlessly, and is going to pull off a massive national championship game flawlessly, as best as one can, given the pandemic. That sends a message that's more powerful than $150 million.
Yeah, and that kind of got to my ultimate question. I mean, does it matter if the economic impact number is 100 million or 75 million, 150? The ultimate bottom line value of the event is less tangible, but potentially much more important.
Exactly. As I said, as a percentage of GDP, we're going to be arguing, you know, we're slicing molecules because it's just too small. And if you want to put it in context, the Lilly Corporation sales dwarf $150 million. And so it doesn't mean a lot. IUPUI's spending is more than that. And no one is going to have a put on a headline, IUPUI bigger than the Big Ten, the championship game. But what IUPUI can't do and what the big championship game will do is it will show the world again, well-run city, able to pull something off in the most trying circumstance possible, a once-in-a-century pandemic. And Indianapolis is not going to do it once. We're going to do it twice. In fact, you could argue we did three times because we had the 500. So that to me is the best advertisement, the best value, because it gives talking points to the governor, to the mayor, to the members of the city county council that talks about the fact that amidst all the chaos and craziness, Indianapolis gets the job done.
Is there a law of diminishing returns? I mean, maybe I'm more sensitive to this because I'm in the media and we're, you know, we cover this stuff all the time. But I feel like, well, the national media was here for 3 weeks in March and April yep. for this tournament. There obviously was a lot of talk about the city back then. Does Indianapolis need to continually burnish its reputation as an event host? I mean, is this industry all about what have you done for us lately?
I think imagery and advertising is a constant. Indianapolis competes for attention with lots of other regions. And the more that Indianapolis can get its message, its identity out in front of people. And again, remember, we're doing this. It's not costing Indianapolis anything to do it. Actually, they're going to make money on it. So this is the best type of advertising. We don't actually have to pay for it. And whether that money that we're going to make is $150 million or $25 million, point is, we're going to go cash positive on the money. And guess what? We're going to get mentioned over and over and over. That kind of advertising, you literally can't buy.
Well, Mark, thank you so much for such an informed perspective.
Thanks again. Thanks for having me and enjoy the weekend.
My thanks again to Chris Gall and Mark Rosentraub. If you're interested in learning more, IBJ's Mickey Shuey has a story on the front page of the latest issue of IBJ on everything that's at stake in this latest test of Indy's hosting medal. And before you get on with the rest of your week, there are a few other stories in the latest issue of IBJ I want to draw to your attention. John Russell examines the latest numbers for hospital diversions in central Indiana as health systems strain to care for the surge in COVID-19 cases. Emily Ketterer sheds light on the battle for a statewide policy on solar and wind energy projects, which often run into roadblocks in a melange of local ordinances and public boards. And Barb Burgetts reports on the effort in the Indiana legislature to further improve Indiana's business-friendly tax structure by cutting personal property taxes for businesses. And again, you can find these stories in the latest print edition of IBJ or online at IBJ.com. I will say, it is quite a bit easier to access all of the latest local news about business and politics, and all of IBJ's data on Central Indiana's business community and economy if you're a subscriber. It works out to about $2 per week for actionable information you're not going to find anywhere else. Just go to IBJ.com and click on the subscribe button. And thanks again for making time this week for the IBJ podcast. I'm Mason King. Hang in there, everybody. We'll be back again next week.